morning, everyone, and everyone on Zoom, I guess, as well. Do we have folks on Zoom? Okay. So good morning, everyone. It's so happy to, so nice to see so many faces here, and I'm sure there are many people on Zoom as well. I forgot my glasses. So does anyone have cheaters? Yeah. Thank you, because the print is small in this report, and much of it I have in my head. I am going first only because the GM instructed me to go first. Let's be clear. I did not ask to go first, but the GM said, you go first. I'm like, okay. And I will be brief. I'm just going to go through a few highlights of what is happening right now. So many of you might remember, I'm going to start with grid updates. Many of you might remember John Jeter, who did short money for quite some time. He and Denise Young actually joined the station around the same time. They were doing a program together in the evenings. They left for a while. Denise has come back as one of Verna Avery Brown's hosts with What's at Stake, a rotating host. And I think, is that correct? Did I say that? Okay. And then John Jeter moved to Ethiopia and gave up his show for a while. But then he said, I really love radio. And I miss the show, and I have another perspective being on the continent of Africa in terms of economics throughout the Black diaspora. So he has expanded the scope of short money to include all of that now. So he has returned at 2 p.m. on Thursdays. And this past week, it was a rather controversial interview he did with, but you know, journalism is controversial, right? So we have to remember that. With a Venezuelan reporter. So you can go back and listen to that if you like. He does very good work, John Jeter. He's worked for the Washington Post. He's written for The Informer, many other outlets. I don't see the brother, but we're excited to announce that DC's own Freedom Futures Collective is going to be joining WPFW at 6 p.m. on Wednesdays, and they will bring their artivism to the air of WPFW. They are very DC-centric. You've seen them at the Target rallies. You've seen them almost at every protest, honestly, and they're dynamic, so talented. But they also have a political analysis, really, that is central to the mission of WPFW. And they bring in young people to perform and to work with them. And we hope that also will garner not only a younger audience, but a larger movement audience that is here in the District of Columbia doing the great work. So we want to welcome them. They will be taking the place of Sojourner Truth. And Margaret Prescott, just so you know, whom we love and we're still in touch with, and we ask her to do special programming for us, she retired from KPFK. I think some was health issues, but also she was ready. And Nana Jumpy, who is wonderful, the first word of this organization escapes me, but it's something for a just immigration. She's the executive director. But what has happened is her programs now, because her availability is not that of Margaret's, so sometimes they are sending us a pledge drive show when we're not in pledge drive, we have to scramble to edit. Sometimes they edit, but then it's a 40-minute show, but we don't know that. So it hasn't been great since Margaret left. I will say the content is always great. I mean, Nana's a great interview, the guests are great, but the consistency that WPFW needs is not there. So that is why we are replacing it. I mean, we have this HD channel. Maybe, you know, that's another place to put it eventually. We're not saying, you know, a firm goodbye to Sojourner Truth, but we're doing something else. We also want to make sure that we're representing DC more in our grid. So Freedom Futures Collective is a way to do that. Another way we're doing that, which we're very excited about, is to have Washington Informer and freelance movement journalist Sam P.K. Collins join us for a weekly program. I don't know if you follow Sam's reporting, but he is one of the best journalists that we've seen in DC, younger, you know, and I can't say younger because everyone's younger right now. I don't know how old Sam is, but I do know that he is out in the streets following all that's happening. He's at the city council following all that's happening. So, and he's following the movement leaders also and the movements in D.C., Free D.C. and others. So as in his words, he says he will bring a weekly D.C.-centric program entitled All Eyes on D.C., unpacking everything you need to know about local politics and education. The show will also include tidbits about Pan-African issues and the tenets of grassroots journalism. So that's our grid update. You give me time. Am I at time? I am. I'm finished. Okay. I was like, wow. Okay, I'll speak faster. We have some special programming coming up. I'll just recap that in May 15th, we did our annual Nakba Day programming, Radio Free Palestine. We had a $10,000 challenge grant for that. We ended up making a little bit less than the $10,000, but the donors still gave us the $10,000. So we ended up with close to $20,000 on that day. And this is, we've been doing it now over a decade. It was not WPFW's idea. We joined with other stations across the country and a few stations outside of the country to produce this. It was the brainchild of a Lebanese journalist, Laith Marouf, who went back to Lebanon after October 2023 to check on his family. And, of course, now we have no idea. We try to WhatsApp him, check in with him. We don't really know how he's doing because he is in southern Lebanon. And so we hope that he's doing well, but we do carry on his legacy through that program. On June 20th, we have a program. It's Black Music Month. We have Black Music Matters from midnight to midnight. It's also another fundraising opportunity. We have another donor that's given us a $10,000 challenge grant. I have no doubt that we will exceed that. I'm pretty sure of that. All the programmers are super hyped. They'll not only be playing the music and much of the music that they already play, but they'll also be giving historical and contemporary context to why Black music is so important and the fact that it is fundamental to almost every genre that exists, certainly in the U.S. and I would dare say worldwide, with the exception of indigenous genres that we see around the world. We also have June 27th, so there's an organization called the Next 250. It's actually a group of organizations coming together. There's a huge mobilization in advance of this 250th celebration on the Mall. People like Linda Sarsour, who is a WBAI host. She's also a Palestinian activist. You also know her from the Women's March. She will be speaking. Also, One Fair Wage President Saru Jayaraman will be speaking. We may be broadcasting this live, and I say maybe because the organizers, if you know anything about trying to broadcast a movement event, it's last minute. They're still getting it together. But it is an important event, and it is a cross-section of organizations coming together to do the work. So we're not sure. If it does happen, it'll probably be noon to 3 on that day. June 30th, we have our annual LGBTQIA programming co-produced by the Inside Out Collective, and that is the house that Wanda built. Those of you who may not know that about this history, but Wanda Alston was a beloved D.C. Black, gay, lesbian activist very early on in the city, along with Sheila Reid, who actually started the Inside Out Collective here in D.C. And so this program is in, while we honor her, it is not literal honoring, but it's in the spirit of the work that she did in this community about making sure that the most marginalized in that community were given a voice and were lifted up. And so they have done a fine job in the past. I have no doubt that, again, this year's programming will be a dynamic and interesting and educational listen. And it is both music and public affairs. July 3rd, we're partnering with the Hip Hop Caucus, who does a lot of work. As you know, Reverend Yearwood does the environmental program, Climate Fridays. But what you may not know about the Hip Hop Caucus is they have a very robust voter activation campaign called Respect My Vote. So in the wake of the rollback of the Civil Rights Act, we will be partnering with them to unpack what that means, what the impact is, and more importantly, what people across this country are doing to mobilize to ensure that as much of our voting power is intact as possible. I think this is my last. I'm getting to my last, two last things. I have started with this year's evaluation. So our programmers did a 2026 self-evaluation, and I've started with the one-on-ones with them. And specifically talking to those programmers who are making $100 or less per drive hour. So not going by the goals, and this is actually Shana's brilliance and Tom, who also collected this data, distilled this data so we can understand it. we're going to start with those making less than $100 per drive hour and then move to the list of those making less than $200 an hour to help strengthen them, to figure out how we can support them to, Shana will talk about the interns we have coming on, but one of the things we're going to try to do is expand their social media footprint, and we're going to give them the support to do that. So we're working on that. And then finally, we have an exciting special project working with Sue Goodwin on this for the in our news department for the 250th anniversary, the people's anniversary of this country. And it is entitled Voices of an American Reckoning 250, WPFW's Public Collective Remembrance Project. And basically, it's a two-part project. One will be a day-long programming piece. We don't have an exact date for that yet. It also will be folded into whatever national programming we'll be doing. We'll have at least an hour from WPFW as part of the national programming. But the thing that we are most excited about, I think, is that we want to capture as many voices in the WPFW ecosystem as possible. That's listeners, that's supporters, that's programmers, that's board members, that is, you know, anyone, and their families, their neighbors, their friends, their enemies, anyone you will, you know, you're at the farmer's market. Ask the question, and it's a very simple question. I'm serious about that. Like, you're at the protest. Ask the question. But it's really simple. The question is, the question that we're asking is, what does an American reckoning look like at 250 for the rest of us that were left out, really, of this great experiment, that were never, never meant to be part of the experiment, you know? And that includes black people, brown people, poor people, able people or disabled people or people with ableism, queer people. I mean, what does, you know, to pull from Howard Zinn, what does indigenous people, what does a true people celebration of 250 look like, and what does the country have to reckon with at this point? So to that end, we're asking people to do a simple thing. Wherever you are, you find some interesting folks, take your phone. And the phone, and I know for the people on the Zoom, this is hard. But the phone, if you have an iPhone, which many of us do, and even now on Androids, there's something called voice memos. You're going to open that, and Michelle's lifting her eyebrows. You're going to open that, for those of you who can, and we're going to help you if you can't. But you're going to open that, you simply hit record, you record them, it gives you a little share icon, and you can email it to this address, which is, and you can also email your questions to this address, which is AmericanReckoning250@WPFW.org. We are here to help you get those drops done. We want the drops to ultimately be a minute. We're going to start introducing them on July 4th. Yep, I'm done. On July 4th, throughout that day, we're going to house them on our website under a portal that's about American 250, Our Voices. We're also going to integrate them into our social media campaigns. So you can talk to me about that after. If you want me to record you today while I'm here, just come to me. I'm happy to do that. And that's it. Thank you.
All right, we'll hear from our general manager. And if we have time, we'll have questions for either, okay? So Shana, please.
Aloha, everyone. Hi, I'm Shana Lona'aya. I use they, she pronouns, and I'm, for the last 80 days, I've been WPFW's general manager. it's been a time. I've gone through my first pledge drive, which has been such a learning experience, seeing how everyone pours so much of their love, their time, their talent, and their tithe into the station. So I just want to give a lot of appreciation for folks who do so much for the station every day. I want to begin with saying how, saying that appreciation for folks. We have 5,292 members. We're a part of a community. You are part of that community. And I know we can only go up from here. That's why I'm looking at my notes, and I have terrible handwriting. I should have done this on the phone like you did. So with that, the 592 people, I want to start really investing in who our people are and where they are, and because we're tasked with going to them. This is why I'm really excited to say that after nearly 20 years, we'll be bringing back Nielsen ratings to the station, where we'll know exactly who our listeners are. Where are they tuning in? Who are they? Where do they go to school? Like, we can get so much demographic data that will improve our sponsorships, our grant writing, and our fundraising. I'm really excited about that. We're also breathing new life into our volunteer program. Since revamping our volunteer orientation, we now have monthly orientations first Thursdays of the month. We've already had over 30 signups since we've done this. And Vinny, our volunteer coordinator, has done an amazing job onboarding folks and doing one-on-ones. And our idea is to then funnel them into committees that most of you already sit on. So know that you might be seeing some new fresh faces that are ready to dive in and do the work. Let's see. We'll also, some of you have heard, we're going to be launching into, in July, a rebranding process. I know that sounds kind of scary when we, because it's been a while since our logo and some of our assets and website have been looked at, but I really want to emphasize that this is going to be a community process. The firm that we'll be working with will be hosting community listening sessions to really hear what does WPFW mean to you? What has it meant to you? And where do you think the station needs to go? And then synthesize that information into branding that really embodies who we are. So be on the lookout for that. We'll be starting that process in July. Our hope is to have it all rolled out by our 50th. Hopefully, actually earlier than that, like early next year. Let's see. Oh, yes. A part of that is we're bringing on, you know, talking about this energy, we're bringing on new interns. I am so excited. I have spent the last few weeks interviewing with Howard students, with Georgetown, American, UDC students who are all really excited to join the WPFW community. We've had over 30 applicants vying for a development and communications internship with WPFW. They will be helping us elevate the platforms of our individual programmers, we're wanting to see, you know, snippets of their shows on our Instagram and reflected in our newsletters. We'll have a development intern that will focus on capturing lapsed donors, you know, folks who maybe their credit cards have expired and just need a little phone call to update that information. They'll also be helping me nurture relationships with our listeners and donors to know exactly the impact of what their giving has to the station. Very exciting. They'll be joining us for 12 weeks. So those of us in committees, be prepared to see some fresh faces who are ready to work. Let's see. 5, 6. With that is a concerted investment in our programmers. Like Katia said, how we're looking at helping our programmers boost up their listenership and hopefully then the number of donors who come out during pledge drives. This means, you know, Katia has been working hard on evaluations, one-on-ones. We're going to start revamping and doing some quarterly trainings, as well as doing some sharing with other stations on what sort of techniques and tools have really helped their programmers elevate the work that they're doing. Because I am blown away every time a programmer has an interview that teaches me something new. And I'm like, why doesn't the world know about this? And we have some of the best interviewers who have just expert techniques and really getting to the root of why a person is motivated to change the world in the way that they are. Just some quick updates. We have, since coming on board, we Tia and I have secured, you know, 3 challenge grants, 2 of them being $10,000 and 1 being $15,000. We have upcoming pledge drives, the next one is August 2nd, the 15th, then August 11th to the 24th, and then December 13th to the 19th. And then I hope to see everyone tomorrow at our Palisades Hub concert, hosted by Craig. We'll be joined by 2 amazing DC artists. Yeah.
Amy K. Bormet and
Elijah
Baalbaal.
Yeah,
both phenomenal. And Amy was one of the original hosts for Jazz Stories, as you might remember.
All right, well, that's it. That's all I have, and thank you.
Okay, we have time for questions. Any questions for either Katia or Shayna? And Verna will bring you the mic.
We like surprise at PFW.
Hi. What is tomorrow? I'm sorry, you just said you
opened. It's a fundraiser.
I'm sorry?
It's a fundraiser. So Craig did a very successful first fundraiser at Palisades Hub, which I think is over on Reservoir, off of Reservoir Road. And it's a jazz fundraiser. So these are 2 jazz artists. Amy is a dynamic pianist, composer, vocalist, and Elijah plays saxophone, and they both are great. And it's almost sold out. I think there are only literally few, like 2, 3, 5 tickets left. Oh, 14? Thank you. 14 left as of this morning. Visit our website.
Thanks, Verna.
I know.
Hi. 2 questions. One on the, One in terms of the memo, in terms of the anniversary, 250th anniversary of this country and the reckoning. Are you going to provide some instructions and make sure people ask permission to record or, you know, that sort of thing? And maybe, you know, alternative ways to phrase that question. You know, reckoning may not necessarily be understood or interpreted, but whatever people have to say.
There's more there is more narrative that we have here, fuller narrative, but I didn't have time to read it all. So in terms of how to phrase a question and what you want to extract from the question and ask your people, I mean, you know, this is where community journalism rests on the person asking the question, right? So if you feel more comfortable asking the question another kind of way, basically it's, what does this moment mean, again, for all of us? I think all of us in this room, one way or another, was left out of what the founders meant. You know what I mean? So however you want to phrase that, the email address I gave out, you can email and we will get you instructions. I mean, it really is, unfortunately, your phone is the best way and the most easy, the easiest way to record. And I would say, I'm sure you have, I shouldn't say I'm sure because I know there are some people that don't, but many, many, many of us have a young people in their life that can show them exactly where voice memos is. And my daughter's always, when we're together, grab my phone all the time. Something I don't understand. She's like, oh, mama, dot, dot, dot. And she gives it back to me. And I'm like, how'd you do that? You know? So that's one way to help. But also reach out. And I'm happy to literally get on the phone and walk you through.
We'll have a guide on the website and on Instagram. Yeah.
Right. I just want people to ask people permission since it's going to be, you know, copied and that sort of thing. That's all. But yeah, thank you. The other question I had was with respect to the monies that are the challenge grants. Are they going to be a separate part of a fundraiser, or are they going to be included in the August fundraiser? How are those going to roll out?
Yeah, those are separate. So those are challenge. So usually we tie this to a special programming day. Mm-hmm. So they don't go towards the total goal for a pledge drive. That's a good question.
Yeah. Okay.
So it's like additional. So like we tried to lock down more money.
Right. Yeah. And as soon as one can understand what it's tied to, that will help promote it, yes. help us to promote it?
Yeah, we'll have PSAs running about it.
You're talking about the project it's tied to? Is that what you mean tied to?
Like the challenge grants. Like we say right. that like, yeah, the $10,000 for the NACBA day, the challenge grant, yeah.
Right, but I'm trying to, are you talking about a particular project at WPFW that it's tied to or the day? The one we have coming up is the Black Music Matters Day.
This particular thing is in my eye, is maybe in other people's eyes, kind of like.
That mic also has an echo that makes it really hard for me to hear what
maybe,
you're saying.
Maybe not, maybe me, but Shainer listed three individuals who offered $10,000, $15,000, and $10,000. Mm-hmm. So my question is, that will be tied to, and she's answered it, I believe, that it will be tied to individual days of a programming theme as a fundraiser outside of the upcoming August, you know, scheduled fundraiser. So my request is that we know what it is tied to as soon as possible, because that helps us to promote it, you know, amongst other community.
The first two are already done. We've done those two, just so you know. There's the last one right now coming up is Black Music Matters.
I thought she was talking about new money.
Yeah. No, thanks. And there's someone in the back
room
after
Susan. Well, hi. Yeah, I'm glad you asked that question about how to ask the question that we're talking about. And you know, Katia's right. There's different ways to do it. And what feels comfortable to you, and to remember the end goal, which is, one, it needs to be short. And a lot of people, they can go on 5, 10, 20 minutes when asked to think about our country at this moment. So how to be specific enough with your question so that it can be something that can be answered in a couple minutes. And we don't want make people to feel like it's a test, that there's a right answer. You know, sort of remember the context, because this is a moment of reflection. And my God, it's going to be a moment of celebration. We all know that. One grand party, right? But it is a moment for all of us to reflect on what didn't go well and for whom. And the idea of moving ahead is, how do we take account for that? You know, is there something that they would like to see happen? So I don't know if that helps, but you're being the journalist here. So, yeah.
That was Sue Goodwin, the news director at WPFW. We have time for one more.
Hi. I'm interested in being a communications intern with you guys. I'm a college student at Trinity University. But the second question I have is, when we're looking at what our country has to reckon with 250 years, has anyone come up with the idea of interviewing someone from the Native American Museum and asking how the Native Americans see their part in this story? I mean, obviously, we as colored people have a part in this story, but what about theirs? I mean, people tend to forget the Native Americans, but I was wondering if you had thought about reaching out to them and seeing how they're going to view the 250 years of America's history.
So we are in touch with the Tayacs. I don't know if you all know them. They are the indigenous people of this region. And Sebi Tayac, his wife, his sister, we will definitely be pulling them into this project as indigenous Americans. Also, the intern, I think it's closed. There was an application process, and we're at the interview stage. I'm sorry.
Yeah. But please stay look out for a future internship cycle. This is only a 12-week program, so we're hoping to institutionalize this so that it'll be cyclical. And also feel free, if you're still interested, to get involved with our LSB or with our volunteers. Thank you.
All right. Verna said I could have one comment. I'm sorry, Chair. I just wanted to thank you both very much for your work. I want to congratulate you, Shana. 80 days of amazing vision, strategy, and execution of a lot of wonderful work. Thank you so much. That last GM was so lazy compared to you. Thank you so much for getting everything done.
And there's no online questions?
That's it.
Okay, cool.
All right, we're going to move forward in our agenda.
Testing. Good afternoon. My name is Lillian Green. I am a poet. And the first poem I'm going to do for you this afternoon is based on an incident that took place in 1853, when people of African descent were enslaved in this country. The poem is entitled, I Am Perfectly Black. It is based on a notice that was posted in Upper Marlboro, Maryland. It was posted by a man named James Belt. And in the notice, he described the man, the black man he was seeking to recapture. He described him as tall and stout, about 28 years of age, a full suit of hair, a missing tooth, and perfectly black. This happened in 1853. James Belt may be the reason we have Beltsville. And the power of the notice for me when I read it in the African American Museum was that in 1853, he could see the perfection of blackness so much that he wrote it down in a notice to recapture him for $100. So the title of the poem again is I Am Perfectly Black. I am perfectly black. My ancestors were, and I am, perfectly black. I need not deny it or put on an act. Who I am is an undisputed fact. I am perfect. I am black. I come from ancestors who came through. I know what I am here to do. I am here to keep their legacy intact. With them I have a spiritual pact. Our soul connection is real. Their power I am able to feel. In their power I know what can be done. Toward them I do not walk. I run. Their spirits are ever near, reminding me of what is clear. It is clear the future is now here. The future of ancestors who cried perfect tears. Tears through which they were able to see. Descendants not yet born absolutely free. Of those descendants, I am but one. Yet many more are destined to come. For those to come, I must be true. And like our ancestors, I must come through. Through the middle passage of this day and time, moving humanity into a new paradigm. In this knowledge I firmly stand, rooted to my ancestral land, I stand firm, I stand free. Girded by ancestors who are here with me, like them, I am perfectly black. I am perfect, I am black. I am perfect, I am black. I am perfect, I am black. Thank you. So this next one is a more current piece based on the times that we are in, and particularly for black people and what is happening as it relates to our country. The piece is entitled, How Far Back in Time? How Far Back in Time? There is a not-so-supreme court in this nation. Back in time is its current destination. The not-so-supreme court is a six-member faction. On the U.S. Supreme Court, they engage in group action. They exist as a sinister six. They exist and they insist. They insist on turning America back to the white tradition of black submission. On April 29, 2026, the Senator Styx issued a decision. Louisiana versus Calais reveals their sinister vision. Calais effectively ends Section 2 of the 1965 Voting Rights Act. Black people continue to face institutional attack. In Alabama versus Milligan, less than 5 weeks after Calais, the Sinister Six had more to say. They said intentional discrimination against black voters was okay. The Sinister Six have taken judicial steps back in time. The word to describe their decision is rewind. What are the Sinister Six considering as they rewind? How far back in time? When do they believe America was fine? Was it before the Voting Rights Act, before the bloodshed, water hoses, and dog attacks? Calais and Milligan prompt these questions, and there are a number of disturbing suggestions. What about before the 1964 civil rights legislation, a time when black people faced routine humiliation, a time of a formidable foe? Jim Crow. The Jim Crow era in America is a sinister time frame. There's one word to describe this era: shame. Poll taxes, all-white primaries, literacy tests. To suppress the black vote, America demands the best. Sharecropping, massacres, convict leasing, nothing about Jim Crow was pleasing. Black codes, lynchings, and the ever-present Klan. The Klan is one of the original hate groups for the American white man. With this in mind, how far back do the Sinister Six intend to go? The multiracial people of America have a right to know. For the Sinister Six, it seems progress for black people must decline. Dred Scott v. Sanford readily comes to mind. The U.S. Supreme Court and Dred Scott made it plain. In America, black people have a designated lane, disdain. Black people had no rights white people were bound to respect. This is what Dred Scott ruled, and it is what Calais and Milligan reflect. Dred Scott, Calais, and Milligan have a similar vision. Black people are held in derision. Will the 1857 Dred Scott decision be resurrected? Will black people have their human rights respected? From Dred Scott, there is a 169-year through line. The line runs to each Sinister Six mind. No black progress, instead regress. Regress to the time of laws written by and for land-owning white men. A time when the humanity of black people, America, refused to defend. We the people must ask, how far back in time? When will the Sinister Six stop their rewind? Will they go back to the destruction of Reconstruction? During Reconstruction, after the Civil War, multiracial democracy was explored. America passed the 13th, 14th, and 15th constitutional amendments. Chattel slavery ended. Due process, equal protection, and birthright citizenship defended. Voting rights for black men extended. After a mere 12 years, 1865 to 1877, Reconstruction ended. America and its institutions would no longer defend it. Maybe the Sinister Six want to rewind to the Civil War, a time when U.S. colored troops showed their bravery. A time before the official end of American chattel slavery. The Civil War was 5 years of killing and fighting. It was a time when democratic principles were only in writing. America's ideal of democracy was not fully practiced or embraced. The fault line was the inclusion of people with a black African face. What do the Sinister Six really have in mind? They seem to yearn for a return to the time of the nation's start, a time when black people were not deemed an equal part. Black people were not treated as an equal part of the human race. This was the reality of America's colonial space. Capitalist greed brought black Africans to America to be enslaved, inhumanely mistreated by customs and laws most depraved. In 1619, the first ship with these enslaved people arrived. In 2026, their free descendants continued to survive. Yet colonizers created chattel slavery to exist in perpetuity. Could chattel slavery return with the Sinister Six unity? If so, America and the world needs to know, and the not-so-Supreme Court needs to go. Make no mistake, the Sinister Six have a destination for this nation. And a rewind to the year 1619 may not be an exaggeration. Thank you so much.
Cillian Green, brilliant. Such intellectually ingenious and clever poetry. Cillian Green, poet extraordinaire. She's also a professor, an adjunct professor at Howard University. Cillian Green recited the call of freedom at the 150th anniversary of the District of Columbia Emancipation Day at the MLK Junior Memorial. She was recognized as a social justice thought leader by Kerwin Institute for Study in Race and Ethnicity for her work entitled Lifted. And for the 50th anniversary of the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under the Law, Cillian Green wrote and presented Civil and Right, which is published in Moving America Towards Justice, 1963 to 2013. And perhaps most important, her most important distinction is that she's a longtime listener, member of WPFW, and our in-house poet. In fact, she wrote a poem for our anniversary called Jazz and Justice. So let's show her a little bit more love. Thank you very much. Well, in case you missed it, the sacred right to vote that our courageous ancestors faced water hoses for, got bitten by police dogs, took beatings, served jail time, those rights have all but been demolished recently. Sarah Rohani is an assistant counsel at the NAACP Legal Defense Fund. She litigates voting rights cases nationwide, including before the U.S. Supreme, or as Cillian would say, the not-so-Supreme Court. Ms. Rohani was on the litigation team in Louisiana v. Kalis. Welcome, Ms. Rohani, to the WPFW Town Hall meeting. She's joining us by Zoom.
Good afternoon. Are you able to hear?
Welcome. Sarah Rohani. Is her mic on? Unmute yourself.
I'm unmuted. Can you hear me? I can't hear anything outside. But if someone could maybe give it a thumbs up or... Okay, fantastic. Thank you. So good afternoon. It's really a pleasure to be with you today. And thank you for letting me follow Ms. Green and such an incredible poem. I myself, and I know many of my colleagues, would really love a copy of that poem if you're able to share it. So as mentioned, my name is Sarah Rohani. I'm assistant counsel with the Legal Defense Fund, where I work on many of our voting rights cases. And I've been part of this litigation about Louisiana's congressional map since 2022. I'm going to be speaking with you about the opinion in Calais as one of the attorneys who litigated the case, and I will not speak for too long, so we have the opportunity for questions. And I apologize, I am under the weather, so if my voice is a bit nasally, scratchy, or both, it's not me, it's the sickness. So with the Supreme Court's opinion in Calais, the promise of equal representation in our democracy disappeared right before our very eyes. In a 6-3 ruling, the court eviscerated Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act. and the ruling was not grounded in precedent or really case law when the case had been originally heard in March of 2025. It was a straightforward racial gerrymandering case. It was a constitutional claim. But when that original case wasn't enough to achieve a broader goal of dismantling the Voting Rights Act, the court then, in a rare move, set that case for re-argument and reframed the case around an issue that had not been litigated, which was the validity of Section 2 itself. And that's not how the legal system works. You know, appeals courts are not there to review issues that were never presented at the lower court level. And even though there were actual cases pending that squarely raised the issue of Section 2 and had fully developed evidentiary records on them, Calais, with its utter lack of evidence, was the vehicle that was chosen to advance this goal. So we all know that at its core, Section 2 was about fair and equal representation at all levels of government. And in the Calais case, while the Supreme Court upheld in name the test that's used to prove racial discrimination, they have made it virtually impossible for plaintiffs to bring these claims. As Justice Kagan stated in her dissent, the court's opinion rendered Section 2 all but a dead letter. So the decision is disingenuous at best. They claim to be modifying the existing legal framework for assessing these claims, but in reality would make it just nearly impossible for Black voters to prove discrimination at every single step of the claim. As just one part of the opinion, they've effectively elevated partisan goals as a wholesale defense to racial discrimination. So lawmakers now have cover to adopt racially discriminatory maps as long as they can concoct some non-racial pretext, which includes partisanship. So it basically compels courts to rubber stamp racially discriminatory maps in the name of partisan power grabs. And we have seen this opinion trigger an entirely foreseeable nationwide campaign of racial gerrymandering across the nation. So attempts by states currently under Republican control to eliminate majority Black districts and majority minority districts nationwide. So I wanted to also note that it's not just the timing of the opinion itself, but also a rare procedural move that the court took. So usually after an opinion is issued by the court, the Supreme Court has what's called a traditional 32-day time period before what is called issuing judgment, which means giving the lower court back its jurisdiction. So this 32-day period is to give the parties time to seek re-argument. And in an extraordinary move, the court decided to waive that traditional time period and allow the district court in Calais to immediately assume jurisdiction, which meant that the injunction of the 2024 map with two majority Black districts was back in place. An election where early voting had already been started was basically put on pause for the congressional seats and told by the governor that those people who had already voted in that election, the votes would be discarded. And so the timing of this opinion and that procedural move really make clear that this was an invitation from the court for this decision to go into effect immediately and create this late decade redistricting we're now witnessing. So nationwide, there are about 500,000 elected offices, ranging from local offices like school boards to federal offices like Congress. And before the VRA was passed in 1965, there were fewer than 1,400 Black elected officials nationwide. And in the last 60 years, that number had grown to over 10,000. That progress was because of the Voting Rights Act, and that progress is now directly at risk of being destroyed. And I want to also make sure that we discuss that this did not happen by accident, by merely one Supreme Court opinion, but it's been a decades-long effort to make sure that this progress is rolled back. So in 2013, we watched the Supreme Court gut preclearance protections in Shelby County versus Holder. In an opinion that was authored by Justice Roberts, the court had promised that even though it was gutting those preclearance protections, Section 2 as a nationwide ban against discrimination in voting would remain viable. And then in 2019, we watched the Supreme Court give cover to partisan gerrymandering in Rucho versus Common Cause. In 2021, we saw the Supreme Court limit critical protections to combat racial voter suppression tactics in Brnovich. And then now in 2026, which is also the first redistricting cycle after the protections that were destroyed by Shelby County, we have Calais, which is really the final nail in the coffin. And that, quote, final nail wasn't even enough. As we just heard, you know, in Calais, the court took great pains to make clear that intentional discrimination was still viable. They even took pains to make clear that they were explicitly not overruling Milligan. But just a few weeks ago, in their shadow docket opinion in Milligan, they made clear that that wasn't the case. They had sent Milligan back down to be reviewed in light of the new Calais opinion. That district court panel, which did include two Trump appointees, did exactly that and declined to allow about Alabama to revert back to a map that was found not only to violate Section 2, but was also intentionally discriminatory. And we know what happens next. Immediately, the state of Alabama appealed to the Supreme Court and was quickly rewarded in an order on June 2nd with a 6-3 vote that broke down on the same lines as Calais. The court applied Calais and upheld Alabama's 2023 map, which had failed to draw a majority black district. And so the court's analysis in that order also shows that its stated modifications or update to the legal framework governing Section 2 claims goes far beyond just Section 2 vote dilution claims, but extend to these intentional discrimination claims as well. So with Calais and with Milligan, the Supreme Court could not have been clearer that this promise of a multiracial democracy is not theirs to protect. It's yet again ours to continue to fight for. And as we know, these congressional maps are only the beginning. Section 2 applies to all levels of government. So we should expect to see the dismantling of state legislative districts as well. And I know that there are various numbers being thrown around for seats that are at risk, but it's very difficult to quantify. And it's not just because there are so many, but it's because we're not just seeing Voting Rights Act seats at risk. Like, for example, in Tennessee, that was not a Voting Rights Act district. It was simply a majority black district because it was centered around a majority black city of Memphis. And so it's difficult to quantify, extremely expansive and extremely important. In these state legislatures, in Louisiana, nearly every black state level elected official has been elected from a Voting Rights Act district, and its city councils, its school boards, it's all of these jurisdictions that have tangible daily impacts on people's lives. And there was, as we saw in a recent New York Times article, and it's not just one political party, it's both political parties that will gerrymander at the expense of the voices of black voters and minority voters in this country. And so I will end my speech on that note, and hope that there are any questions that anyone has that can perhaps provide some levity or some hope. But that's currently where we stand in terms of the Supreme Court cases of Calais and Milligan.
Okay. Thank you, Sarah Rahani. Can you hear me at this point?
Yes, I can.
Good. We do have a couple of questions.
Yeah, a few questions. All right.
I had a question before we go to Ms. Michelle Tingling Clemmings. Can you break down for those of us in the audience that aren't attorneys, who exactly was Robert Calais, and what was his charge against the state of Louisiana?
So the Calais plaintiffs, it's several individuals. Bert Calais, I believe is his name, is just the named representative. So there are several individuals that were self-identified as non-African American, and they brought a racial gerrymandering challenge to the map that Louisiana had enacted in response to LDF's Section 2 litigation. So LDF had sued, saying that having a congressional map with only one majority black district violated Section 2 of the VRA. Instead of continuing to litigate that case, the state passed on its own a map that had two majority black districts. And so Bert Calais and the other plaintiffs sued over that map, claiming that that was a racial gerrymander, which means that race predominated in the drawing of those lines.
So is it true that while he was initially described as simply non-African American, a voter, is it true that it was later found that he was in fact a MAGAite who actually took part in the January 6th insurrection at the U.S. Capitol. Can you confirm or deny that claim?
I believe there is a Democracy Docket article that has written that and has documentation to that effect. I believe that the non-African American styling comes from potentially one of the plaintiffs is not white, but we were not able to depose any of the plaintiffs in the litigation. So we do not have confirmation as to that. But there is a Democracy Docket article that has an exclusive and has documented evidence of the things that you just mentioned.
Okay. Michelle.
Hi, thank you so much for that description. From what it sounds to me, and understand I've spent a lifetime around lawyers and judges and I won't even go into all of that, but it sounds to me like there's no longer any legal framework for asserting our rights, at least in the area of voting. So first that my question is, does that like diminish or eliminate the legal opportunities to refute and fight back in that arena? And does that mean that we're then going to have to go to another revolution because they're not allowing us to do things according to their own system?
Yeah, thank you so much for that question. So I think the Callahan Milligan opinions are obviously limited to redistricting, but the opinions that I listed before applied to non-redistricting voting matters as well. I think it has been made clear that both of these cases were very difficult to win, with successes at the Fifth Circuit and in our case in Robinson. And I think it is a time for more expansive thinking. And I forget how you just phrased it, but it was very well phrased. It's that it shows that these opinions do show that when the law and the facts are on your side, you may still lose at the Supreme Court level. So it is certainly a time for much more expansive thinking and action. And litigation has always been the last tool in the toolbox and the last safeguard. But it really is a time even more than normal for policy and advocacy efforts to change voting protections and expand voting protections and even engage other changes directed potentially at the court.
Okay. Attorney Salilian.
I want to thank you for your summary. I also appreciate your remarks about my poem. I wanted to know if the LDF considered filing any sort of motion for reconsideration with the court of its opinion, given some of the inaccuracies that Alito had in the Calais decision.
So we were not, that was, we indicated to the court that we were still thinking about what we wanted to do during that 32-day period, but we weren't given that opportunity because they immediately waived it and sent it back down.
Thank you.
Judge, did you have any questions? Judge Gordon, did you have a question?
Really quick.
Very briefly.
Mm-hmm. Hi, how are you? And thanks so much. This is Robert Gordon, also a member of the LSB here. So what does the LDF have in mind? Can you let us in on anything that you all have discussed? Because that's the LDF's legacy, you know, working for change in all areas through the system, not necessarily through the court. Do you have any thing you can share? You might not want to let the cat out the bag, but I think you're in a safe space here. So can you give us some background on that? Thank you.
Yeah, of course. So we are working on a very multi-pronged approach that's centers, you know, policy changes, communications efforts, as well as litigation. We've been very successful in our state VRA level work. Unfortunately, that obviously has been successful in states that are not our target jurisdictions in the South. And so we are working in close collaboration with partners across the country with a focus on policy advocacy in the voting space and also much more expansively. I won't speak to specifics about that, but we are taking a much more expansive view of LDF's work in the arena. And for the time being, a lot of our effort and focus is being spent on the 2026 election and just to ensure that the 2026 election itself is fair. But in terms of longer term impacts, we are taking a very expansive,
All right. I want to, we got to move forward in the agenda. So I just want to say thank you so much, Sarah, for, seeing us here this afternoon at our community town hall. And we're looking forward to the, Legal Defense Fund and what they have next. For addressing this very serious matter. Please give a round of applause for Sarah Rouhani. All right, I think we're in for a treat. What we have, I don't know if I'm going to do these folks justice. I'm going to try. What is Freedom Futures Collective? Freedom Futures Collective is an award-winning creative arts incubator developing professional artivists ages 18 to 30 in three core areas: cultural organizing, entrepreneurship, individual art practice. Freedom Futures Collective equips our artists to create the freedom future they dream by investing in three key tools, resources and education, professional development, workshops and mentorship, opportunities, fellowship, internships, and residency programs, community office hours, peer-to-peer support, and collective events. The vision: by 2030, Freedom Futures Collectives aims to have supported hundreds of artivists in building sustainable, creative enterprises grounded in social justice. They'll be connected by a regional coalition that pushes forward collective liberation through cultural organizing and economic transformation. We have here this afternoon Majay and Ahmad. Majay and Ahmad from the Freedom Futures Collective. Please welcome them.
How we doing on today? Yeah. So my name is Majay. I am a rapper, poet, singer, instrumentalist, graduated from Duke Ellington School of the Arts. You know, I do pretty much anything from light to dark, you know.
And good afternoon, everyone. My name is Ahmad. I am an MC, lyricist, songwriter, recording artist, also a native Washingtonian, a graduate of the amazing Anacostia High School, and I'm also a member of the Freedom Futures Collective.
Yeah. So, I think we could get started.
True, but we gotta teach them the champ. We gotta teach them why we got pride, purpose and power.
All right. You right. You can teach.
I can lead it.
Oh, you got it?
So we got three words that we need y'all help with. We need y'all to say pride, purpose, and power. But hold on. It's a catch.
Yeah.
When we say we got, I want y'all to say pride, purpose, power. When we say you got, we want y'all to say pride, purpose, power. And finally, when we say I got, we want y'all to say pride, purpose, power. We got
pride, purpose, power.
I got
pride, purpose, power.
You got
pride, purpose, power.
I think they got it, Majay.
You think we ready?
We ready.
All right, Mike. Go bet.
Vision of what you be missing. I'm hoping you make a decision to open your eyes to the glimpse of the future I'm giving. I'm praying that all is forgiven, cause I got the power, birth of the power in the eyes of the silence of the cowboy. In the midst of the night, it burns where I walk with the mind of a power person. I got the pride and I got the focus. One hand to God, I walk with the service. Cause I love to estimate you for you, so I'm growing like no one. This is from the growing up. know why don't you both in it? I keep a guess with the seven in. How did you know you from America's public? The power is all that we need it in.
That was Fire, Purpose, Power with the Freedom Futures Collective. I'm gonna need y'all help on this one, right? So I need y'all to make me a beat, right? Just one quick clap on a quarter note. Clap. Yeah. Okay. Uh-huh. All right, I'm going to tell y'all about myself. See, I'm from up north where Kenny's and fried chicken got mumbo on the side. I'm not the type to claim no hood, but I was raised by KDY. Now they colonize and jeopardize our culture because we haven't said we living in a time where we ain't fond of our new president but friends. Let me tell you why we got the upper hand. All of our culture and history lives so deep within. They can never take our soul from deep inside. Can't no money or no fortress to the joy they try to hide. Man, it's hot, but diamonds form under heat and the pressure. You a diamond in places where value was never settled. Even though they don't get it, just know that you got it made. You was formed to heaven sin before you even know your name. So hear my words, friend. You got it all. Don't get me wrong. I love to make a million because it's hard. But be content and thankful for your wins, even the loss. It's a lesson in it all. Even the pain can clear the fog. Now let me hear you say I'm heaven made.
I'm heaven made.
Okay, I'm heaven made.
I'm heaven made.
Uh-huh, I'm heaven made.
I'm heaven made.
Say I'm heaven made. Now one time, let me see you say I'm heaven made.
I'm heaven made.
Okay, I'm heaven made.
I'm heaven made.
Uh-huh, I'm heaven made.
I'm heaven made.
I'm heaven made. Look, it makes a difference in the world where many people go through things that hurt. When money's slow and check to check ain't feeling like it'll work. The kids gonna need to eat and nothing get it cheaper. The stress is piling up and you ain't got the time to sleep on. Nothing, I mean the metro getting hard to keep on playing. But know that God already got solutions in his hands. Cause you sent from heaven even though in the circumstance. You was born to be a light even when darkness try to win. Huh, but never think that any issue is too big to fix. Cause the one exists to make sure that you better in the end. I'm gonna tell you how it is. Even if it's hard to win, get back up and wipe your tears. Trust me, you gonna win again. And even when you fall, just know that you gotta keep standing. I hope you understand that peace is always that demanding. But be content and thankful for your wins, even the loss. Never let the world kill the love you think you so prevail. Let me hear you say, I'm heaven made.
I'm heaven made.
Okay, I'm heaven made.
I'm heaven made.
I'm heaven made.
I'm heaven made.
I'm heaven made. Now hands up, let me hear you say, I'm heaven made.
I'm heaven made.
Okay, I'm heaven made.
I'm heaven made.
I'm heaven made.
I'm heaven made.
Say, I'm heaven made.
I'm heaven made.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's a good little mantra to repeat to yourself. Yes. Yes.
Now when I say speak your, y'all say truth. Speak your, speak your. When I say we are, y'all say one. We are
one.
We are
one.
So we're gonna slow it down, everyone.
Yeah, yeah.
I have a record called Moving Forward, and it's a reminder. Well, first off, I wrote this record when the assassination of George Floyd happened.
And even though I'm not specifically and lyrically and poetically addressing George Floyd, I do believe the emotions that I felt and that I still feel from that horrendous act is what prompted and motivated me and inspired me to write this record. So this record, first off, is dedicated to anyone out there that has fallen back or that has fallen forward. I just want to remind you, keep moving forward. But I need you all's help again. When I say sometimes we all fall back, I just need you all to say
sometimes we all fall forward.
You know. Once again, when I say sometimes we all fall back, I just need your help in saying
sometimes we all fall forward.
Sometimes we all fall back.
Sometimes we all fall forward.
Sometimes we all fall back.
Sometimes we all fall forward.
Sometimes we all fall back.
Sometimes we all fall forward.
Sometimes we all fall back.
Sometimes we all fall forward.
We ready, Mike?
Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes.
Sometimes. Hey.
We got to keep moving forward, everyone.
Absolutely.
That's the reminder.
It's a necessity to continue to move
forward. Regardless of what's
happening
in life, this is a reminder to keep moving forward.
Yeah.
Sometimes we all fall forward. Sometimes I've been in doubt.
Huh.
Sometimes I've been in pain.
Yeah.
Sometimes I change my route with the road that I paved.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I can't explain
yeah.
why things don't never change. Sometimes I wanna break. Sometimes I feel insane.
Yeah.
Sometimes I feel some time me to some people. Sometimes I think I'm a bad influence and so lethal. Sometimes I wanna kiss her. Sometimes I truly miss her.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm so descriptive.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes I choose vagueness. Sometimes I know the answer.
Yeah.
Sometimes I really don't.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I'm so romantic. Sometimes I feel alone.
Yeah.
Sometimes I be like this.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes I be like that.
But in the end, sometimes is what I understand.
Sometimes we all fall back.
Sometimes we all fall forward.
Sometimes we all fall back.
Sometimes we all fall forward.
Sometimes we all fall back.
Sometimes we all fall forward.
Sometimes we all fall back.
Uh-huh. Sometimes we all fall forward.
Sometimes I do this.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know why. Sometimes I'm outgoing.
Sometimes
I'm just shy.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I wanna cry. Sometimes I wanna fly. Sometimes
yeah.
I speak my truth. Sometimes I tell a lie.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes I choose to dream.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm obscene.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes it doesn't seem the way that it seems.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I'm flirtatious. Sometimes I'm self-reflective. Sometimes I'm optimistic.
Yeah.
Sometimes I feel depressive.
Yeah.
Sometimes I feel lively.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I just despise
mm-hmm.
me. Sometimes I'm in my own head and my thoughts be clashing. Sometimes I be like this.
Sometimes
I be like that.
But in the end,
sometimes
is what I understand.
Sometimes we all fall back.
Sometimes we all fall forward.
Sometimes we all fall back.
Sometimes we all fall forward.
Sometimes we all fall back.
Sometimes we all fall forward.
Sometimes we all fall back.
Sometimes we all fall forward.
Sometimes, sometimes,
sometimes, sometimes, sometimes,
sometimes,
sometimes, sometimes, sometimes, sometimes, sometimes, sometimes, sometimes, sometimes, sometimes, sometimes, sometimes, sometimes, sometimes,
sometimes,
sometimes, sometimes, sometimes, sometimes, sometimes, sometimes, sometimes,
Sometimes. Sometimes we all fall back.
Sometimes we all fall forward.
Sometimes we all fall back.
Sometimes we all fall forward.
Sometimes we all fall back.
Sometimes we all fall forward.
Sometimes we all fall back.
Sometimes we all fall forward.
Thank y'all, family. Just keep moving forward.
Yeah.
Just keep moving forward.
We have to. So as he was talking about moving forward, I am also a youth preacher. I want to let y'all know that. So I'm going to take y'all to church for a little second. If y'all don't mind. All right.
I don't think they mind.
I don't think, okay. All right.
I think they welcome it.
Okay. Praise the Lord, everybody. All right, let me stop. Okay. So this next song is called Supernova. And I felt that I needed, it's a part of my album that has yet to be released, but it will be coming out very, very soon. And I'm super, super excited for it because I just felt like we need to be inspired in this time. And it's very important to tell your personal testimony to be able to inspire somebody else when you're honest with yourself. You can be able to inspire somebody else. So this is called Supernova. Yeah, so I'm ready. Uh-huh. That's tough, cause I'm hungry for a living. I'm the whole world. If you really understand, then you should know it's time to buckle up. I get in this need, everybody that ride for you. Yeah, if it's not you, it's gonna be nobody. It's time to leave the opposite. A working 9 to 5. It's time to dream again. Yeah, it's time to represent your own mind and walk along with a crown that has been all mine. For a minute, I put it down in this reality. Tried to fit when I am 15. With these tears. These fears and these words get to stirring the pot in your brain like teasers. I get my shade, the one and only keeper. You are the one who will upset things and make a shift in the place that it has been true. Like I can't even make a joke. When you're like the sun shine, no matter who will be around you, boy, it's not what you got, it's what you win. You gotta like the negative, cause when you let it be, let it be, let it be. Expialidocious, you're expeditiously wonderful cause you're chosen to live life, not feel life, or be like anybody else in this world cause you're growing. The eat factor that hit the heart, if you gotta be strong then go ahead and smell the clock. Can't I got new bills that one day can be real, and the will to tell you when to keep still. Listen, I won't find the way when it's right time with me to strong. It knocked me off the boat. I had to swim to get back on. Used to get sick from Nick at Rocky. I was home alone. Fighting with burgers of peace. The made invasion seemed like a thief in the night. Charleston to kill myself like my name comes to Eritrea in the dreams. Yeah, look. Never told the peace, but worry about the peace that feel like free. Not the horror love. That ain't the type of place I wanna be. So I went back the way. When it's the time for me to let it go. I'm not holding on when it's the time. I keep everything inside it up and that is how you know it's like a supernova star. Yes, I stay. Y'all are stars in this. this world, no matter how young or old you are. Age does not matter. That's my song called Supernova. It will be out soon. Thank you.
So one thing about FFC, Freedom Futures Collective, is we're artists at the end of the day, and we're artists first, but our main goal, our main mission within the Freedom Futures Collective is to speak on things artistically that is happening within our world, whether that's within Washington, D.C., or on a global scale point.
Nina Simone said it best, it's our jobs as artists to reflect the times.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
So we have a record that we would like to do, our last record within this set, a cappella for you all. It's entitled America.
Yeah.
And it's our take and our perspective on our country. Just as simple as that. So whenever you're ready, family.
I want to let y'all know a little bit more about this. I wrote this song when I was 14. And I felt, this is when the George Floyd situation had happened. And I felt so angry. I was angry, and I decided that it was so important to use your gift to reflect what is happening. So this is called America, viewer discretion advice. I want to copy the style of the greatest, because most of my people don't blend it with paper. We gonna stand out. They can't nobody tell us that loyalty, passion, they pay not the favor. This is a young generation. They silence the patient, and now we gonna fight and be noticed. I cannot tell you that we gonna survive it, but we cannot doubt it. Our love is the fire. They don't have passion for life as we know it. Closed doors, open doors. It don't matter when we fighting, we killing each other. Black lives, they will always matter in this generation. I can't live without them, and we listen to life, but we can't be alone in our struggles. Just looking, we live it like lions fighting for life. All of the dreams that they said will come true just got took from the mind. I'm living life, and it's not the greatest, but I had to live and look past all my haters. You learn to keep up when you hunted like chasers. They not gonna give us peace till we all hate it. Bad guy, that's the black nation to the white eye. All they see is danger. You see people running and it's black faces. You gotta learn that society lies to you. Talk about love, and then they not invited. You talk about peace up with countries at war, and they say that America's all you should want. And that's a lie. And you see the pain in my eyes. You think they're telling me lies. Black people, not the enemy. Look at the news and you see what they do to me. America. And this is the country of pain and not peace. Freedom was promised, not promised to me. They hate the life that was given to me. Hated by people who live for the peace. Violence is basically all that we see. Try to be nice and they silence the peace. And it's pain in my eyes. Can't you listen to me? America. America. And this is the country of pain and not peace. Freedom was promised, not promised to me. They hate the life that was given to me. Hated by people who live for the peace. Violence is basically all that we see. Try to be nice and silence the peace, and it's pain in my eyes. Can't you listen to me? America.
American as apple pie, but I was never the apple of your eye. Just like your flag, you hung me high. Instead of pride, I was penalized. I'm the bastard child and the most hated out of all the children. Castrated with all my contributions, there won't be a severance. America, you've been a bad parent. Brought such anguish to make me vanquish. You've been tainted, this land ain't sacred. Blood on the pavement, and it's blatant. Your foundation is about to cave in. You need a spanking, or better yet, a whooping. Still, I won't suffice. All of those lynchings, sister declaration. From the beginning, we've been doomed as a whole nation. Who do we blame, the land or the owner? There is a disease, and I ain't talking COVID. It's starting to spread since somebody's in the office. It starts with an R, and it ends with an ism. The word on the street is there's a war ahead of us. America's wishy-washy. Who am I to trust? You throw a pity party when you don't get what you want. The word democracy is starting to sound dumb. A noose on my neck couldn't keep my head hung. Politics are politics. It'll never trump God. Enough with the falsehoods and all the facades. You tell me what you want, and I'ma tell you who you are. No pledge allegiance, but my hand is on my heart. It's a wedge between us, and that's where we could start. Dialogue gotta happen. I know that it's tough, but that's America to sweep it under the rug.
America, and this is the country of pain and not peace. Freedom was promised, not promised to me. They hate the life that was given to me. Hated by people who live for the peace. Violence is basically all that we see. Try to be nice and they silence the peace, and it's pain in my eyes. Can't you listen to me? America, America, and this is the country of pain and not peace. Freedom was promised, not promised to me. They hate the life that was given to me. Hated by people who live for the peace. Violence is basically all that we see. Try to be nice and they silence the peace, and it's pain in my eyes. Can't you listen to me? America. Thank you all. We are the Freedom Futures Collective.
Before we leave, it would behoove of us to not mention the reason why we are here. I'm grateful to say this, and I'm honored to say this. Thanks to the help of the amazing Katia, Freedom Futures Collective shall soon, very, very, very soon,
absolutely,
shall be having a radio show on WPFW called The New World Order, or NWO for short.
Mm-hmm.
So please stay tuned. We're having our first episode very, very soon, and expect more music from us and our other peers, and just take an ear. Thank you.
Thank you all.
All right, all right. A little round of applause. Freedom Futures Collective. Where are you guys at, on Instagram or at what?
You can give them a follow.
So you all can follow us on Instagram at Freedom Futures Collective. It's all together. Freedom Futures with an S, Collective. Thank you all.
All right, happy to have them soon joining the WPFW family. It's fantastic. All right, we have Tom Chase. Tom Chase was our treasurer for the board through some changes in the bylaws. We had to strip him of that title. But he does fantastic work, and he's here to bring us up to date on the current state of the WPFW financials, all right? So welcome, Tom.
Thank you, Kamau. Thank you. Before I start, I want to say this is a partnership with Miyuki. Originally, I started a year and a half ago doing this, and now with Shana, their management. I'm just reflecting the current state of the finances. And I work with both Miyuki and now Shana on the daily bills, as well as budget planning and projecting. So I'll try to answer all of your questions as best as I understand where we are. And then if it's really hard, I'm going to defer to Shana for the current state. We have a few copies of the report, and I don't think it's going to get posted. But let me just say, overall, our finances are right on budget for where we want to be this year. We have our overall budget for the current fiscal year, which is the same as the federal fiscal year, October 1 through September 30. We're shooting for a net positive revenue of $90,000 for the station. And we're currently on track to come right in around budget for that. Our revenue for the year, we're projecting a total of about $1.6 million. And our actual to the end of May is $1.16 million. So, again, we're on track. We need all of the money we're raising, so I'm not suggesting we need to slow down, but we're on track. Our budget that we had set last year had an emphasis on getting our engineering and our transmitter and backup power all in good shape, assessed, and some upgrades budgeted for. With the change of management and just kind of, what's been going on with our needs, we're shifting on that engineering investment for this year. We're deferring it. We did make some investments, but not the scale we were considering last year. So that difference of about $120,000 that we had in the budget to invest in the engineering, we're redirecting towards the branding and the website upgrade that Shana mentioned earlier, as well as the being able to bring in the interns. Both of the interns are going to be paid positions. The development intern will be paid in accordance with our union contract because that's a more kind of advanced skill set. So we're honoring our union agreement. With the budget overall, we've made some progress on salaries, but overall salaries are very below market rates for the staff. We have nine full-time paid staff. But we made some progress there. And also Shana mentioned getting right with Nielsen's. We're working on that in the budget. That wasn't in the original budget, but we're going to make that fit so we can really get our underwriting ramped up. I started listening to WPFW because I really hate commercials, and we're not going to go there. But you are going to hear more support for WPFW comes from organizations in the community, and we've had a couple so far. We're still working out the internal logistics so we can ramp this up and really deliver, three of those announcements an hour is kind of what we'll get to. And, you know, from organizations you can expect to hear from in the community. And the ones you won't expect to hear from, you don't want to hear from, you can expect not to hear from. We're not going to have defense contractors or groups like that. So rest assured. We've made some progress on grants. We're a little behind on that, but we're making progress there as well. So again, I'll just wrap up with, overall we're on budget, and we really appreciate your support. We're making investments to grow in the future. We have a lot of needs, and I think, by the next town hall, you'll hear more about that. We're just starting to put together next year's budget for 27. And as part of that, we're also, I'll be working to help make sure we're planning a few more years out, ideally, 2030, because we know we need to relocate from our kind of temporary studios now, and we'd like to buy a property. So we've got some serious fundraising. We want to grow staff, grow the compensation to the staff that brings them to market rates, things like that. So thanks for your support. Happy to take any questions.
All right, you've heard from Tom Chase on our financials. We have some questions.
So thank you for that, Tom. We really appreciate it. I said thank you for that report, Tom. We really appreciate the effort that the LSV and that you've done. I do have a question about the vetting process for underwriting. Underwriting is something that we've discussed for many, many years, pros and cons, slippery slopes and all that. So I'm a weeds person. I like to get in the weeds. Not that we're going to talk about it here in this moment, but not all nonprofits are in alignment or are with WPFW's mission, vision, et cetera. And not all nonprofits are unlike corporations. So we're clear on not taking corporate funding, and we might need to fine-tune what we mean by that, not assume we're all saying the same thing. And then two, just the vetting process period. If it hasn't already been the criteria and everything already been established, I would like to see that process and have the CAB and LSV and other community entities and individuals participate in that process. Thank you.
Sure. So her comments were around how we'll vet potential underwriters and sponsors and whether the community will be involved in. Oh, everybody heard. Okay. I had a problem hearing it, so I want to make sure I got it right. Okay. The first part is essentially the bottom line. Management reserves the right to refuse any underwriter, any sponsor. So that's the last of the list. And what we have in there is basically we want underwriters that share our values, and we're proud to have our name associated with them. and they're proud to have their our name associated, yeah, vice versa. So I would say those are the two, the main overriding criteria. We want to be proud of each other, and ultimately management decides. And then there's FCC and there's other things, but those are the two bottom line.
Any other questions for Tom?
Let me answer the second part.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
That's the first part. That's where we are now in terms of, you know, we haven't really rolled this out yet because we don't have the internal logistics to scale. So we've had so far, Bridgemere, we've had Strathmore, and right now we're talking with, Bethesda Blues. You know, so it's local businesses, really, nonprofits, local community groups that we're looking to target. But in terms of community engagement and all of that, I would defer to Shayna, on the next steps for that.
Did you want to follow up? Here you
go. Community's broad. So I'm putting out there first, like CAB and LSB as members of the community who have committed and are doing work and are engaged in some of the developmental processes. So I'm really looking forward to hearing the processes that are going to be used. Thank you.
Any other questions for Tom about our financials, our stewardship over our monies? Welcome.
I just wanted to actually follow up on Donna's the question that was raised. There are a lot of controversies among even progressive people on issues, for instance, the Middle East, West Asia. And I'm concerned, for instance, Free DC, which is a group that a lot of people would consider to be safely progressive and supportive broadly of station goals for social justice. Recently, they had a broadly based, participated in some kind of, they initiated some kind of, some kind of demonstration. It may have been against the Iran war, I'm not sure. But the only group that they listed as endorsers was, I think there were two, Jewish peace groups, Jewish Voices for Peace and something else. And when I asked a question about this over email, why there weren't Palestinian groups, the response was, oh, well, we have Jewish Voices for Peace. And I think that there is a real problem especially with underwriting with regard to pressure from groups which are pulling their punches, largely, on these questions about what is happening with regard to Israel. And I'm wondering how on earth, especially if we're talking about endorsements from businesses, which are going to be subject to the pressures from the community, we're going to avoid serious compromises. A lot of people had questions about the Amy Goodman documentary that came out recently and whether or not it was kind of a puff piece for Jewish activism as opposed to a real examination of how the program Democracy Now! Was founded, how decisions were made there. You know, the only demonstration that they showed being covered on East Asia was a Jewish Voice for Peace Act demonstration in New York. I mean, it was extremely slanted, and she uses corporate media spokespeople all the time. I mean, there is a real problem with these progressive groups being subject to pressures, and that needs to be addressed. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else? Yes. We got time for one more. We'll bring up Ambrose.
So as a long time listener supporter, and I do have a question about something Shayna said earlier. This was the first time that I was hearing that when we have the challenge donations, that those donations, and so it's usually a buy one, get two, kind of. So do both the challenge funding and the listener funding,
how, like, this is the first time I'm hearing that they don't count for that drive, that they go into a different pot or a different lane. I don't know if it's this is a question for you or if it's just an administrative question, but, and so I'm asking, is this new? Has this always been? And does any of that money, like if I call in, like I said, I've been donating for years. This is the first time I'm hearing it. We have these all the time. If I'm donating for that, do I know that that money is not going for that drive and I would donate again differently? It's just something we need to really communicate to the community.
Sure. I think I can, let me try to answer it. I mean, all of the money goes to our checking account. So it's just a matter of where we score it, you know, internally for the programmers primarily. So when it's done in the fund drive, each programmer has a goal. And we assess, as Shana had mentioned, there's going to an effort to work with programmers to increase how much they raise in their hour, if they're not already. But, you know, it's just a special day, and that money is being raised for that day, and it comes into our funds. I mean, Kamau is treasurer. Maybe you can answer it, Kamau.
I think it's when they overlap, I think is where, it's when they overlap the two. So within the fund drive, if there's a matching grant, why doesn't the initial contribution not count towards the fund drive? Or does it? Or does it matter?
I don't know. Can I just speak to that? I'm sorry. I don't know.
They have never overlapped. They're only special days of programming that don't overlap. They're outside of the pledge drives. So, and if you become a, if you give during Black Lives, because Black Lives do matter. Prince said that. But, if you give during the Black Music Matters, for instance, you'll still become a member. So you're already a member. So you don't necessarily have to give during the pledge drive again, unless you want to. Some people do that. This is also the first time in a long time that we've had challenge grants is significant. Usually, like, Candy Shannon would get one for her program for, like, $1,000 or something. This is the first time we've had three challenge grants of these amounts, and none of them were during pledge drives. And so when we say they're not counted, I mean, all the money is counted towards our operational expenses, right, unless we've earmarked it for a particular project. Does that make sense?
Let me do this, just in the essence of time. I see Michelle here. I'm going to give her just one more question. I think we need a follow-up. Sounds like you might still be some confusion there. So I think we need to make sure we get that back to her. Go ahead, Michelle.
There may have been an appearance of overlap. I think there was one additional day tacked on to a pledge drive. So there may be that appearance. So just, you know, clarification, I think, going forward.
Sure. Okay. Let's make sure our on-air mentions from our programmers are in line with what we're trying to do internally. I think there may be something going on there that we're saying and talking in terms of who's on air about one thing, and maybe there's something else going on behind the scenes. So we'll clarify that, all right? Just in the essence of time. Absolutely. All right. Thank you. Appreciate your time. Thanks, Dan. All right. We have with us via Zoom our longtime programmer, Stallworth, community activist, host of the program To the East on Mondays. Ambrose Lane Jr. is here with us, and Ambrose is going to talk to us about what he's hearing along the campaign, the mayoral race, what he's hearing from the candidates, along with what he's really hearing in the community from the folks that have to, you know, live east of the river. And then maybe if we have time, discuss that gap and how we bridge that gap between what the rhetoric and the promises are from the candidates versus what the actuality on the ground is for the constituents. So Ambrose, if you're there, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Kamal. And I'm glad to be here. I wish I could certainly be there with you in person. And I'm a little, I wouldn't say that I'm under the weather. I would say that the pollen has got me a little congested. So bear with me if you can while I try to share with you my thoughts about this campaign and drink my tea at the same time. This campaign, this particular cycle is very rare in DC. For the first time in more than 30 years, actually since 1991, are we electing a member to the Congress to replace longtime Congresswoman Eleanor Holmes Norton. At the same time, we have a race to replace a three-term mayor, Muriel Bowser. We have the race for the chairman of the D.C. Council, and we have the race for several members of the council, all at the same time, while under authoritarian rule in Washington, D.C. Those threats are very real, and those threats are impacting the campaign. So I'm going to give you basically two perspectives. One that is the typical campaign trail, which many of you may have seen. There have been several candidate forums, and even some that were televised on NBC4, WUSA9, Channel 7, WJLA, and Fox 5. So all of those were televised candidate forums. And I've seen each one of them. And if I wasn't there in person, I saw it either on TV or I saw a copy showing of the candidate forums. So there were basically four areas that they talked about mainly. The dominant issue was affordability, dealing with housing costs, utility bills, and child care expenses. They repeatedly appeared as the most persistent household pressures. And I'll focus more on the mayoral because the other races, you know, some are somewhat competitive, but the ones that will impact D.C. the most is going to be the mayoral. So both frontrunners say affordability is central, but Janice Lewis-George generally proposes larger public investments and stronger tenant protections, while McDuffie emphasizes implementation permitting speed and measurable delivery targets. Another big issue has been public safety, and it's the sharpest political contrast between the two frontrunners. Okay. A lot of moderators repeatedly in all the candidate forums repeatedly returned to violent crime, disruptive youth gatherings, and the use of curfews. McDuffie favored a more immediate operational posture, including stronger enforcement tools and agency accountability. Janice Lewis-George argued for a more comprehensive prevention, intervention, enforcement strategy, with community hubs and coordinated services. A third major issue was the pressure from the federal government. Forums you know, generally asked how the next mayor would handle President Trump, Congress, and federal immigration enforcement. And both of the frontrunners pledged to end local cooperation with ICE on their first day, while Janice Lewis-George separately and placed particular emphasis on coalition building, litigation, and an assertive defense of home rule and statehood. And the last, I would say, top four issue, and when I'm saying top four issues, these are not the only issues, but these were the ones that were the top four throughout all of those candidate forums that were televised. So the fourth top issue was competence and accountability across all the issues. And questions about the Potomac wastewater spill, utility rates, 9/11 reliability, corruption, and agency performance, that broadened the discussion beyond campaign promises. So and those were basically the recurring questions. Okay. There are some differences between the candidates on those issues, and I'll just do a quick rundown, in terms of how they responded to those issues. So, for example, on affordability and housing, Janice Lewis-George framed D.C. as too expensive for too many residents. She has a Homes for All plan that calls for stronger and expanded rent stabilization, affordable housing funds, zoning and permitting reform, mixed-income publicly owned housing, homeownership assistance, and stronger tenant protections. All of this information came from both her answers and her website, her campaign website. Kenya McDuffie kind of framed the affordability as a deliverables agenda. He has a Homes for Every Generation plan. He has a Homes for Every Generation plan that called for cutting approval timelines by 50% and building 12,000 units and preserving 20,000 affordable units by 2030. And let me just say this. From my perspective, and I did write this and I wrote this publicly, and I'll just share a little bit of some of what I wrote. Beyond this analysis, I felt that they either didn't or refused to get in the weeds when it came to development and housing. Housing and economic development is governed by what is called the comprehensive plan. Muriel Bowser rewrote and revised the comprehensive plan a couple of years ago ahead of schedule. And as a result, and it was approved by the council, as a result, and we have had many people on WPFW talk about this as well, it resulted in plans for higher density, less affordability, more business development, more gentrification, and more displacement. That's my opinion on the comprehensive plan. And neither of the candidates, the top two, nor the other candidates, Gary Goodweather, some of the other ones, never mention how the comprehensive plan relates to whether or not they could actually realize their plans for housing. I thought that none of the key debates, questionnaires, or questioners actually ask the question about how they would deal with the comprehensive plan. So that's just my opinion when it came to housing. Another issue was public safety and young people. Janice Lewis-George proposed prevention, intervention, and enforcement with community hubs in all 8 wards. I mean, that's a throwback to Muriel Bowser. She talked about all 8 wards. And connecting young people and families to jobs, mental health services, and community organizations. She argues that safe communities require coordinated resources, not reliance on curfews alone. Kenya McDuffie supports a more operational public safety emphasis, including first responder staffing, 9/11 modernization, violence prevention, agency metrics, and accountability. He has pressed for curfew authority while arguing that young people need both accountability and opportunity. Third issue that came up in the mayoral race was home rule and federal pressure. Janice promised to rescind the MPD order allowing cooperation with ICE and building local and national coalitions, working with the delegate and the attorney general and protecting home rule. Kenya McDuffie also pledged at one of the forums, especially the NBC4 forum, he pledged to end cooperation with ICE on day one. His platform included protecting immigrant families from federal overreach. His broader argument is that experience, relationships, and practical execution are necessary to protect district interests. Now, from my perspective, again, neither one of these candidates addressed the core issue that affects young people, and that is the lack of amenities, lack of opportunities for young people. The district budget over the course of the last few years has cut the budget for a summer jobs program. There have been at least 10,000 jobs cut for young people over the last couple of years. And when young people need a place to be able to be themselves and be young, none of that exists where they live. Of course, they're going to want to go to where the action is. They want to go to Navy Yard and places like Navy Yard because that's where the action is. Those places are not welcoming to youth. And there's no alternative location like that east of the river.
I mean to cut you off, but if you could give us a couple more minutes and a little bit of time for Q&A, wrap it about 2:15.
I got you. All right, I'll do that. Sorry, everybody. Okay, so, and the last thing was economic development and governance. So Janice, emphasized a people-first government, smarter development, university and hospital-based growth, small business support, and stronger accountability. Kenyon emphasized opportunity, accountability, and business climate, lower living costs, strategic growth, streamlined approvals, measurable public safety outcomes, and agencies that answer to residents. So that was a short synopsis of the two campaigns from a broad kind of city view. But what was missing, and this is very important, what was missing was a perspective, at least my perspective, being an East of the River resident, that it did not include specific language that addressed the issues of the poor, issues in terms of literacy, issues in terms of chronic unemployment, and all of those things. And even though I would like to get deeper into that, for sake of time, Kamal, I would just wrap it up there and say that WPFW can have a major impact or could have had a major impact by addressing these issues specifically through the lens of a historic campaign. And I'll stop there.
All right. Thank you, Ambrose. Appreciate that. Any questions, thoughts? I know folks who live in the district have been probably getting a barrage of activity. I think the last day of early voting is tomorrow. So those of you who haven't done that yet in the district, you still have a chance to do that. The primary is still going on. Any thoughts, concerns, questions for Ambrose? He do?
Everything is political, right? I heard you speak on intentions to secure immigrant residents. What are the intentions to examine and address the way that non-immigrant residents are being impacted by the additional law enforcement, the law enforcement locally, and those who are not local, and then those who are slated to come?
Is that for me?
That's for you, Ambrose, yes.
That's a good question, and I did not hear the candidates address that issue at all, at least not in the four televised debates. Now, there were a couple of other debates that I could not attend, but on their websites or in their pronouncements and public statements, I have not heard them address that issue specifically. And quite frankly, I don't know if they ever will. It's never been on their radar. And it's a good question. I think it needs to be asked, but that's not on their radar.
One more question.
What do they plan to do with the National Guard? Because they talked about ICE, but they didn't address the National Guard. Are they planning to use them as an additional police force, or are they going to dismiss them once one of them is in power? Because that is also an issue. Some people feel that they and ICE should go, and we should go back to having our own police force like we have. But I didn't hear them addressing that issue. So
you're right. I have not heard them address that issue either. But I think they conflated National Guard and ICE for the most part as federal overreach. I'm sorry, hold on. As overreach. And so they did pledge not to cooperate with ICE. They were not as clear on whether or not they would take that posture with National Guard. And I'm not sure that they can, quite frankly. I know that President Trump the other day promised that if one of the candidates that he did not like got elected, he was going to take over D.C. And so I would assume that that is with National Guard more than it is with ICE. There are moves in Congress right now that is trying to defund ICE or take away their dollars. I don't know how that would affect D.C., but that has no bearing on National Guard troops being in the street, being downtown, being in neighborhoods. And I would suspect that Trump, whoever wins, is going to increase National Guard troops.
Yeah. Good afternoon. My question is more politically. The charter within D.C. During the primaries, you can only vote as a Republican or as a Democrat. The city has, and this is from years ago, I'm an independent, and so the city has at one point had 50, or probably up to 75 to 100,000 people who are independents. You know, the charter or the Democratic Party, whoever's in charge of that, they sort of refuse to include everybody who can vote in the primaries. You know, they won't. It's a simple process that, you know, they can go through to make that change, and they refuse to. Years ago when Fenty was running for office, I made that suggestion to him twice. The second time I saw him when he was rerunning, he tried to do that down at the ethic board, and he did it too late. The move was too late. What is it that you can do to show a force that we all can vote simultaneously at the same time? During primaries, when Obama was president, I noticed that other states or jurisdictions, everybody was able to vote during the primary as well as the general election. Did they talk about anything like that?
Well, they're on record as to whether or not they supported the what you're referring to is open primaries, and whether or not independents can vote during the primary. So that is unresolved, even though it was passed by referendum. And both ranked choice voting and open primaries was passed. However, the council only funded the ranked choice voting part of that referendum. And so because of that, open primaries was not implemented. But ranked choice voting has been implemented, and it is set to begin next Tuesday. And so your question, did they address this? Not really. It wasn't really. They really focused more on the ranked choice vote part of the referendum, not the open primaries part. I did not see any questions that were given specifically about open primaries in D.C. They were all centered towards ranked choice voting.
We have one more question, and then we're going to move to our election process. Go ahead, Sue.
I want to refer to something Ambrose just made reference to. Make sure you heard it. President Trump did say this week that if Janice George wins the election, he will advance to revoke home rule. This is atrocious, and he can't do it on his own. Congress would have to do that. And that then depends on what happens in the midterms, because if he has Congress in his pocket, we have got to be on top of this, friends. And I also want to say to you as community members, we are very committed in our news department to be following these developments very closely, and including ranked choice voting, how it works, what you need to know, but all these also these political developments. And if there's something you think should be covered more, let me know directly to the news department, to our general manager, to our program director, because you have the right to expect that.
And to
all right, wonderful, on. Wonderful. Thank you, Ambrose. Really appreciate that. All right. Since we've got your attention for a few more moments, we're going to try and touch on something that's very important internally here with our organization. We are entering the election season, so we kind of did a little parallel there. We wanted to talk about locally, and then also we have an internal election going on within Pacifica Foundation. All right, so we have two parts to it that we want to touch on today. Right now we're going to bring up Julie Hewitt. Julie Hewitt is our director, one of our directors at the National Board, and Julie is also the secretary of the National Board. She's going to talk about what's called the waiver process, all right, the waiver process, very important in terms of eligibility during the election. So we'll hear from Julie. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, everyone. So this is perfect. We've already got the slide up there that shows membership eligibility. So most people know that listener members can donate $25 a year to become members. We've got these elections coming up, and June 30th is the date by which you have to have donated $25 sometime within the last year to be a paid listener sponsor member. There's a second way to be a member, a listener sponsor member, and that is to volunteer 3 hours of time under the supervision of station management, and that 3 hours of volunteer time also has to be completed by June 30th for you to become a listener sponsor member. Some people don't have the financial means to donate the $25 and they have more time, so they prefer to volunteer their time. There's actually a third way to become a member, and that's by applying for a hardship waiver. Some people have difficulties with both of those forms of donating and or volunteering to the station. And so what we want to do is make sure that folks who face financial hardships or face mobility challenges getting into the station or other challenges with coming up with volunteer work that can earn them a membership, that they can apply for a hardship waiver. And so this webpage that's showing right now doesn't have the hardship waiver link on it just yet, but it's going to have it on there within a day or two, and it's going to be, this webpage is at the website elections.pacifica.org. So it's pacifica.org, except put elections in front of it. And within a day or two, the link is going to be there. You apply for the hardship waiver. It's a confidential application process. You know, a small committee of people has been put together to review those and make sure that people, you know, that they're not just Mickey Mousing us. Of course, our preference is that you would donate the money or volunteer the time, because we're a nonprofit organization. It doesn't mean that we don't need the money and we don't need the help. That's our preference. But if somebody really is in a hardship situation, we can grant them membership. And so it's a pretty simple form. It's just, you know, name, address, email, which station, because we've sort of harmonized this process across all the stations in the Pacifica network. And then just a brief explanation of your hardship and why you're connected to the station that you want to get membership in. So I do have a question back there.
Got some questions?
I have a sustainer.
Yes. Yes. That's a member. Yeah. Yes, if you're a sustaining donor. Okay.
You're good. So you ask for, you have to have $25, but I'm sustaining the program.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the minimum, 25. That's the minimum. You sound like you're at more than that. Yep, no problem. Any questions about the waiver?
Yep. No? Okay.
So the only thing I want to say is, if you're already a member, but you know someone who's in that category, please help get the word out so that and the applications are due by June 30th. So, all right? Great. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Julie. So listener membership, there's a third option that will be up on the website where if you have a hardship waiver, you can apply for that. All right. So what I want to do now is kind of walk you through. A lot of folks have been getting a barrage of either emails or a combination of emails and text messages. So we're going to try and distill what's happening so you all don't get confused about what we're doing in this moment in terms of the elections. We are not voting right now. It's not a voting situation. What you've received is a form to nominate a candidate. There are two tracks. You have what's called a listener member and staff slash volunteer member. Those nominations are different if you're a listener or a staff. First things first. I think it went away. Sorry, Matt. Don't worry about it. I'll take care of it. Whenever you can get it back up. But the eligibility is key. As Julie said, if you're a listener, 25 minimum within the last 12, before June 30, 3 hours, hardship. Staff, you have to work for the organization as a paid staff or volunteer 30 hours between a 90-day period. Once you are eligible, then you would receive the emails that you're getting. So anybody not get an email in here? Maybe we could, you don't have, did you not get any? Okay. You want to check with the station, because if you are certain you're a member and you didn't receive this email, you want to request that ballot or that form for nomination. You don't want to be left out, all right? Yes. Yeah, I'll pull it up on the next, there's a couple slides in. All right, so we understand eligibility. Next slide for me, Wanda. Slide it up, just. Yeah, up the other way, yep. All right, one of the things here that you want to take a note of, to be a candidate, you have to actually fill out and apply to be a candidate. So even if you nominate somebody, that does not mean that they are a candidate. This means you say, hey, this person feels like they could be a good representative for WPFW, but it's not a guarantee that that individual is a candidate. Just says you've nominated them. The person has to go in and essentially submit a reason, a short and a long bio, a picture, and they have to send all that in to the election supervisor, which then will post that information for folks to review as they nominate. And even then, it depends on what your candidate is running for, because you have to have a certain number of nominations to be a candidate. Correct. So, for example, I want to run for the chair of the national board. In order for me to do that, I have to submit a short and a long bio, a photograph. I have to sign the Fair Elections campaign form. I have to submit that, and then I have to go out and get 100 nominations from at least 3 different stations: PFW, BAI, AKT. Right. Okay.
What next?
I mean, you hear that? Okay. In order to run, I'm going to say it again, in order to be a candidate and run for the national board, I want to do that. I want to be the chair. I have to say short, long bio, photograph, fair campaign signature, submit that in, and I have to obtain 100 nominations from a minimum of 3 separate stations. That's 100 total. But I can have like 1 from PFW, 80 from BAI, and another 19 from another station. It doesn't have to be 100 from all 3. But a combination of 3, I have to get to 100 nominations. I have to be very vigilant about what I do as a candidate in this scenario. I have to go out and get nominations from at least 3 different stations to get to 100. All right? That's the national board. Can you go to the next slide? Just slide on the, All right. There you go. One more time. One more slide. All right. So the way you nominate, this is going to be once you have your email and you click in to the form, you're going to see your station at the top. You're going to see You fill in your name, your address, some other information, and then you're going to get a series of positions to nominate for. The first one, they go from highest to lowest. You're going to see your chair of the national board. And you'll go in now, and you'll see that there's been some people nominated already for chair of the national board. If you haven't gone in to see the form, you'll see as soon as you go in there, some folks have already been nominated. You do not have to click on any one person on the form. You don't have to select from the people who are already listed there. You can nominate someone on totally separate from who's on that list by filling in the box at the bottom with the name of the individual. Again, that doesn't mean that person then becomes a candidate. They have to then go back and do all the things I explained about getting nominations and so forth. But you can start the process by saying, hey, I like Harris. He's a great guy. Let me nominate him. You better tell Harris you did that, because now he's got to go back and hustle up if he really wants to run. All right. So, and again, you can nominate. In this process, you can nominate anybody in that's eligible to be a, really, it's anyone who's a member. You can nominate anybody who's a member. You can nominate anyone who's a member for the national board. Listen, coming up quickly, the deadline for it, all this has to take place by the 30th of June. We got a couple weeks left. All right, so you want to really try to ascertain the individual you feel like is going to best represent not just PFW, because remember now, the national board is the fiduciary for all of us. So there's a lot of impact when you send somebody to that national board. They now become responsible for all that goes on coast to coast. All right. Next one. Slightly different. You won't see this next, which is the voting process. You won't see this until August, but I'll just touch on it here. It essentially, once we get through the nominations, then you can start what's called the voting process. All right? I want you all, when you go in, to take a look at how your votes are counted. Okay? I have it circled at the bottom. It's in your packet. The voter ranking and calculation systems, they are different. Okay, every vote is not calculated the same depending on the position that you're voting for. So you want to be aware of that. All right, next slide. All right. Because there are both listener and staff, there's actually, like I said, two different ballots that kind of are going to come out. If you're a listener, you get one version. Staff, you get another. There's five stations in the network, so that means there's going to be 10 different ballots. If you have given to BAI and PFW, depending on which way they've determined you to be, you may get one or the other. I don't know exactly how they determine that, because some folks give to the other stations. But if you want to be a, if you want a PFW ballot, because you know you gave to PFW, you got to call or email the National Election Supervisor. But there's two different kind of ballots. So, and then what you're voting for or nominating for, excuse me, right now, all of us get to nominate for the officers of the national board. That's chair, vice chair, secretary, treasurer. Everybody in this room has an opportunity to nominate anybody for those four positions. Yes. Even programmers. Anybody in the organization, as long as you're a bona fide, eligible member, you can nominate for chair, vice chair, secretary, and treasurer of the national board. All right. You have a second level of stuff going on. Also on the national board. Okay? So that's the officers. You also have on the national board what's called a listener director. Okay? This particular position will not appear on a staff ballot. The staff cannot send a listener director to the national board. Only you, if you're a listener member bona fide, you have an opportunity to nominate a listener director. Okay? One listener director is sent from each station to the national board. So that's five total. One listener director. So if you want to send, who's a good, no, you're all staff in here. Who's the listener? Michelle. You want to send Michelle Tingling Clemens to the national board as a listener director. You have to nominate her. Only listeners can do that though. All right. Yes. No. You. Oh, sorry. Yeah. She asked if she's a listener member at WBAI, can she nominate Michelle Tingling Clemens? And I'm saying no. Michelle Tingling Clemens is a member of WPFW. Now, if she was a member of WBAI, sure. All right. And then the third level, yeah. Sorry. No, that position, it's position determinant. The three station requirement is for the four officer positions on the national board. That's the only way that works. If four officers have to do that. So the candidates have to understand that. As do the person, you know, all of us who are nominating folk have to understand that as well. But it's the four officers of the national board that need to get three stations. You sound like you look like you actually know what's going on. I don't. All right. The last piece of this is going to be your local station board. So that's all of us here today. I meant to call out everybody who's here. I hope folks didn't leave, but the local station board is going to be a lot different this year or next year. It's going to be reduced in size and responsibilities have been essentially eliminated in terms of local oversight. What's going to happen is in the nomination process, all of us who are members of WPFW get to nominate, first of all, I'm sorry, all of us who are listener members of WPFW get to nominate the officers of the local station board. That's chair, I'll get you, vice chair, secretary, and two coordinator positions called outreach coordinator and membership coordinator. So you have to be a listener member. Five officers of the local board. Chair, vice chair, secretary, outreach coordinator, and membership coordinator. Go ahead. Why? What being? What? The positions? Oh, all the other people. Well, I actually have that slide in there. The way in which it was described, I think, this is just from memory, so don't quote me on this, is that it's like a more direct way for the membership to vote for individuals. Okay. Why the reduction in numbers? Maybe you have to go on. I don't know exactly why it goes from 24 to 13, huh? No, it's not 7. No, it's not 7. 13. But it's on the website. I'm going to get to it. I think it's on one of the slides I have. Yes. No. The local station board does not have that same requirement. No. I believe for the listeners who want to be the in any of the officers' positions, their nomination numbers 15. All right. For the staff, again, everybody votes for your four national board positions. Locally, the staff gets to vote for two LSB members. Yes, the PNB does. She's asking, does the PNB have any other positions? It does. Remember, I said the PNB also is going to get one listener director per station. That's only the listeners send that individual, all right? Let me try and give it to you. I know what you're looking for. I know what you're looking for. I know. Let me just go straight down one track, which is the listener track. Listener, you can vote for all four officer positions on the national board. Chair, vice chair, secretary, treasurer. Listener, you can also vote for your local director. It's called listener director. This is all national board right now on the PNB. All right. Yes. That's station specific. Yeah. Every station sends one of the listener directors. Well, in a way, yes. Yeah. Well, overall, the composition has gone down. Yes, that's correct. And then from there, listeners still, locally now, you have five officers on the local board. All right? Five officers on the local board. Chair, vice chair, secretary, membership coordinator, and outreach coordinator. Listener, that's it for you. All right, so you're good to go. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Yeah. No. The question was, does the LSB still have an ability for some kind of oversight of the station? No. The LSB cannot create anything once it's formed to perform oversight. It is, as I believe the bylaw says, it's functioning like a CAB, a community advisory board. Yes. Okay. So no more oversight locally. All right. Staff, really quickly. Again, staff can vote for all four national board officers, chair, vice chair, secretary, treasurer. You can nominate anybody in there if you want to. Staff also has the ability to send two staff to the national board. Staff comprised of programmers and paid staff. All right? The caveat to the two is it's two for everybody. We don't send two from PFW. You have to choose from two staff. They may be from PFW, BAI, KAT. So you need to look, well, I'm going to throw this at the National Elections Supervisor because it is a little tricky. There's a link that you can click on there and see who's eligible right now. And it has everybody who sent in their candidacy. They've completed all they need to complete. You see their picture up there. But you're correct. How do you know? So it's best to kind of operate locally, but think nationally. I don't know. I don't know how you would, other than engage with other stations, membership to discern that. I don't know. You have to, but it's politics. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if that's required. I think the statement that an individual makes, the short and long statement, is of their own, yeah, whatever they like to say. Again, you can go out and ask people, who's this individual, blah, 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 but I don't know. Other than through reading the statement, I think you can contact them at some point. I don't know if you can do it now, but I think you can do it during the elections. Ask questions of the folks who are running. I don't have the current status on that, but we can touch on that at another time. All right. Can you go to the next slide for me, Wanda, real quick? Let me finish up with the, staff. So the staff sends two directors to the national board, but that two can come from anywhere in the country. So you may see on there already that's on the list, you may see a few people, you might not know who they are at all. You don't have to use that. You don't have to select them. You can add your own staff person in there that you want to send to the national board. You have two, so there's two slots. You can add two people on there. And then, of course, locally, the staff sends two LSB members to the local board. All right. It's hard to see, but this is what your email would look like. comes from, it says, nominate now, Pacifica Foundation, Inc., national local station. And it should look like that. Next slide. When you click inside, this is what it's going to look like. You'll see where I've circled the second circle there. If you click on that link, that's where you get to see what candidates are available. All right, so you don't have to go start filling out people and checking stuff. You can click there first to go see who's already been set up and listed as a candidate. Next slide. Pacifica National Board Chair. As you can see, we've got Wolf, DiRienzo, Malvo, Young, Goodman, I don't know them, Henley, so on and so forth. Okay? You don't have to check any of those people. Alright? You don't feel like you're compelled to check those folk. You can add your own name in there as a nomination. Because I was getting phone calls and people asking me, hey, you know, who do I check? I don't understand what's going on. I said, well, you don't have to check anybody. You can add, you know, individual's name. Okay? Next one. So this is the next office, vice chair for the national board. Again, you'll see a list of nominees already. Henley, this looks like the same here. Malvo, Sanders, I don't know them. Our own Katia Stitt. Again, don't have to check any of those people. You can add your own. Next. Same situation here, secretary. There's people there already. You don't have to select them. You can add your own. Next. And I think this is last one is treasurer, same situation. Yep, that's the national board. There's no treasurer locally, but there is one national board. Next slide. All right, because I'm staff, I don't know what the listener ballot or nominee looks like here. But for staff, this is what you'll see next. You get your two seats for the national board staff and then two seats for the local station board staff. What I assume a listener will see after they go through the national board is the one director for the national board and then the five for the local board. But someone who's a listener has got to help me out. I don't know if anyone's been through that already, but that's essentially what you'll see. All right? Similar. Next slide. So remember that link I told you about earlier? You can click this and see who's available. This is what that looks like. It'll pop up here. This is what the candidate. So someone who's running for the national board, you'll see it there. There are pictures there. There's a link to their bio and information. All of that's right there on the elections site. Huh? Where's my... Nah. Next slide. Here's your listener rep. Okay? That's for listeners only. Next slide. And then staff. For the staff only. Next slide. Hey, keep going so we can, yeah, right there. All right. Yeah, it's hard to read all that. Actually, give me the next slide. I think that's the one that says, yeah, here it is. Okay. So, you want to know what the board does, right? Someone was asking me a second ago what the board is doing. So here are your, essentially, the duties of the national board, all right? National board, ensuring and facilitating fulfillment of the purpose of the foundation, ensuring compliance with applicable state and federal laws, financial health, regular communication with the members, appointing, supervising, establishing the powers and duties of the foundation's executive director, overseeing the conduct, management, control, Pacifica Foundation, meeting to carry out the duties of the board, registering as board members, assisting with off-air membership recruitment, assisting with major donor fundraising, and assisting with publicity efforts, all right? That's your national board's duties. So when you're going out and you're nominating in this period, this is what your criteria is. Is this person able to fulfill this assignment? Next slide. All right, is your local station board positions? And someone asked me about the duties. So the duties of the local station board. Work with the station management to ensure that station programming fulfills the purposes of the Pacifica Foundation. Assist in station fundraising activities. Actively reach out to underrepresented communities. All right, that's in short. So when you think about your local board and who can carry out those duties and fulfill those duties, that's what you're measuring that individual on. Next slide. I think that might be it. Is that it? Okay. All right. Got a few questions. Anybody as lost as I am? Go ahead.
I'm lost about something, and I want to ask this question to Julie Hewitt, because I believe you participated in the creation of these bylaws. The voice and the input from the programmers, who are basically the heart and soul of this network, has been tremendously reduced in this new process. Almost sidelined two representatives to the national board. Why is that? Why have we been, our voice been reduced in this whole process? No, I'm...
I think one of the key things is the initial part was to make the board smaller. Make the board smaller because, okay, hang on. Because there are a lot of people on the LSB, and when everyone wants to speak at the same meeting, we don't always make progress on things really quickly. If everybody feels like they have to have their voice heard. When people are bringing new information, it's great, but a lot of it is repetition, okay? And people get to hide on a large board and contribute nothing. It's sort of the, you know, I'll let everybody else do all the hard work and I'll just, you know, it's a vanity project. So that's the first part. The second part then is, if you're gonna have smaller boards, it's not possible to maintain the same ratio that we had before of three listener member, whether it's LSB or PMB, three listener members and one staff. And so the point is that on both the PMB and the LSBs, there are the people who are directly elected, and then there are the people who get added to those bodies by the folks who are directly elected. If there are a lot of really strong programmer candidates for those other six seats on the LSB could have a majority of programmers and a minority of listeners. It could go the other way, so it's really about how strong the candidates are. And then also things like, you know, the people who are directly elected, if they look at themselves and they say, gee, we don't have anyone in this group with a lot of financial savvy, maybe we better find someone who's got financial savvy to be one of the, board-selected members, then they can do that. Or, you know, they could, you know, it just depends. And, you know, somebody like Kamal is both financially savvy and a programmer and a great listener, too.
Thank you. All right. So we're at time, and we want to respect the venue, okay? So it's 3 o'clock. There are refreshments. If you go out the door here to your right, okay, Gloria Turner, the magnificent Gloria Turner, has provided us with some refreshments. So make sure you visit her and our folks before you leave. All right. Make sure you do that. I want to thank the outreach committee. Our chair for the outreach committee is Violetta Diamond. She wasn't able to be here today, but the vice chair is Martha Peterson. She's back here in the back. Yeah, plenty of food. We got to go get something to eat. All right. I want to thank the board members. I didn't get a chance to name everybody here on the local station board, but you all have been wonderful today in terms of taking up posts and maintaining the flow today, assisting our membership. So thank you so much to the LSB as well. And thank you listeners for, the cabbage present. Yes, the cabbage present. Thank you so much, for the community advisory board. And of course, our, local management here, Shana is doing a great job coming in and filling some big shoes. So thank you, Shana, for doing that. I don't see Katia anymore, but she was here as well. Sue's on staff. So, we will have this again in another couple months, once a quarter. Okay. So, keep everybody abreast and informed. Again, if you have any questions, you can call me, talk to me about this. I have no problem trying to walk you through it. I think Michelle and I had a conversation not too long ago. So it ends up being a little tricky, the elections, just because it's a new way in which we're operating.